I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. We hear a lot about North Korea and the terrible regime in power there. In the coming weeks, a Hollywood film will be lampooning Kim Jong-un in a major comedic release. We see in the news regularly discussion of missile launches and other saber-rattling from Pyongyang, or even visits from Dennis Rodman. They all sort of overshadow what life is like within the fortress walls of North Korea. A new book provides one woman's remarkable account of life in North Korea and the journey she took to freedom. The book is called Stars Between the Sun and Moon, One Woman's Life in North Korea and Escape to Freedom. The book's author, Lucia Jiang, joins me now with her co-author, Susan McClellan, and their translator, Soo Hyun Nam. Lucia Jiang is a pseudonym, as even today family members who remain in North Korea might be subject to punishment. We will discuss this book now about the escape to China that Lucia made to bring food back, her imprisonment when caught, and the last time she escaped, this time to freedom, and eventually to Canada, where she lives with her two sons. You learn something about survival in this book, about the abuse that millions experience in North Korea today, and about the resilience of a mother. Lucia Jiang was featured in a documentary on CBC's Fifth Estate. Susan McClelland is an award-winning journalist and author. She's appeared in major publications across Canada and has written three previous books, Bite of the Mango, The Last Maasai Warriors, and The Tale of Two Nazines. Soo Hyun Nam is a Toronto-based refugee lawyer and cellist. She translated between Mrs. Jiang and Ms. McClelland and will be translating for Mrs. Jiang on this interview today. The book is published by Douglas and McIntyre. Please welcome to the Plant Online program from Toronto today, Lucia Jiang. Mrs. Jiang, good morning.
Good morning.
And Susan McClellan, Ms. McClellan, good morning.
Good morning.
And Ms. Nam, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us, all of you.
Thank you.
So,
Thank you.
Lucia, when I read your book and in preparing for this interview, what I learned, most powerful for me, was that there are lots of stories like this from immigrants, from refugees, from around the world. Lucia, what did you want us as the reader to learn from your experience from this book?
I wanted the readers to learn about how people in North Korea live and have lived, especially the lives of North Korean women, and the prices that they have paid for their family and for their survival.
Susan, when did you first meet Lucia?
I met her in the fall of, 2011. CN was that, it was around then, September. I remember the day quite well. And I immediately really, really liked her. I felt, despite sort of the grimness of her story, she had such an amazing spirit, and I just right off the bat wanted to work with her.
And this was this book is from my understanding, this is sort of a first in terms of the point of view that it comes from, that this is a female experience of the Korean, North Korean regime. Is that correct?
It's my understanding. Certainly there have been other accounts of women coming forward and sharing their stories in the media. There was also a United Nations Commission of Inquiry that some of the women began to come forward with their stories of the trafficking through China, life during the famine, really themselves as a commodity. That part of that part has only recently come to light in terms of a mainstream public knowing that element of the exodus of North Korean women. Certainly it's something that frontline workers and the refugee communities have known about for a long time. So, yes, very much so. It is one of the first accounts in a book format.
Right, right. Lucia, when we hear about North Korea in the media, there's a lot of, I guess we see how North Koreans revere their leaders, and whether it's outbursts of emotion. I guess that's taught at an early age, isn't it, to revere the leaders as North Koreans do, or as they appear to do.
Yes, it is something that is taught from the moment North Koreans are born. We are taught to revere our leaders from an early age, and we have to learn to.
And when was it for you, Lucia, that you came to know better, that you perhaps thought for yourself that the regime wasn't as great as they wanted you to think it was?
I started to think differently after a few years since I first escaped to China.
I see, yeah. And I guess after the end of the Soviet Union into the 1990s, that was pretty bad because famine had spread throughout North Korea. Lucia, for you, how bad did it get? I mean, I understand that you saw people starve to death. Is that correct?
It's difficult to describe in words what I had to witness. At first, children and older people started to die from starvation, and then children and adults alike, they all started to die. It's really difficult to describe how horrible it was.
So what's the feeling of hunger like today? I mean, people get hungry in Canada 2-3 times a day. Has that changed for you? I mean, in Canada generally we have a lot to eat. I know that in the book you describe about what it was like to see all this food when you got to China.
Yes, it definitely feels very different. The kind of hunger that I felt in North Korea and the kind of hunger that I experience now in Canada. When I was in North Korea, the kind of hunger that I experienced and other people experienced is the kind of hunger that erases all thought from your mind. The only thought that is in your mind is that you have to eat. Whereas the hunger that I experience today in Canada is, I notice that I'm hungry and I tell myself, okay, I'll get to eat a little bit later. But it wasn't like that when I was in North Korea.
Susan, in terms of working with Lucia and Suyin, was there stuff that Lucia wasn't willing to talk about in the course of writing this book?
No, not at all. There was the only incident that she felt, I guess, embarrassed might be the right word, or certainly shy about, was the incident after she had escaped the first husband, the Chinese man that she basically was a concubine because it was a legal marriage. And she ended up meeting the man on the motorbike, and he gave her food in exchange for, it's in the book. She felt very shy in relaying that, but she also said afterwards, and I don't recall her exact words, but, you know, it's not a truthful story unless I say everything. Yeah. And so I think that was the one time she felt certainly shy, but other than that, she knew if she was going to tell her story, she wasn't going to hold anything back.
And this bond that the two of you have, that the three of you have, seems rather evident. I'd ask if that's hard to cultivate, but it doesn't seem so. So what do you think it is about, I guess you've learned about one another, haven't you?
I think so. I think so. I know with Lucia, I kind of joke with her that I wish she would learn English, and I'm always teasing her, saying, how much more have you learned? What words have you learned this week? Because I really could see us becoming good friends. She has a remarkable spirit. She's a lot of fun. I tell this story of, and we communicate, you know, maybe not so much with language, but the words we do say and our glances and our looks, you know. I'm going to recount a funny story. Is when we were at the Ottawa Literary Festival, we were sitting in the restaurant, and CM wasn't with us yet, and I looked at Mrs. Jang, and, you know, the other events that we've been at, she's worn a beautiful dress and whatnot. And I said, so should we go get changed before we give our speech? And I think she was wearing this yellow sweatshirt with a big happy face or something on it. And she just sort of looked at me and shrugged, like, no one told me I had to change. And it wasn't anything she said, but I knew. And so I took her in the bathroom and I got her changed. So there's been moments of a lot of fun, And we've learned to communicate without a language between us.
And Lucia, you're learning English now, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Suyin, you must have learned a lot from Lucia. Is there something lost in translation, perhaps? Do we miss, say, the nuance of her personality? I mean, listening to her today, I get a sense of what Susan says, a remarkable spirit or sense of humor. Well, also, her strength and her compassion.
Mm-hmm. I would say she is a really great storyteller, and in my work, I have been working in the field of North Korean human rights advocacy and refugee law and some journalism work as well, which allowed me to speak with a number of North Koreans in Canada. And actually, Lucia was someone that really stood out to me. Which is why when I was asked by Han Voice at a North Korean human rights organization in Canada, that was approached by the publisher, Douglas McIntyre, to help connect them with a North Korean person who might be willing to share their story. Mrs. Jaring really came to my mind first. And I would say I also work as an interpreter and translator.
Mm-hmm.
So I get to speak directly with the North Korean people that I get to meet. But she really does a great job telling stories. And so far we have attended a couple of events where she did an in-person Q&A session and where I was also helping her with the translation. But she really does a great job communicating her story and what she has gone through. And she does have a really remarkable spirit and a great sense of humor. And Susan could attest to it, but even before I completely translated all that she had said, she would have conveyed her emotion already. I think that's what's really special about this book. And I think the way it is written really captures that emotional content and emotional motivation. So I think it's a very special book, and she's a very special lady.
Indeed, yeah. Lucia, in terms of trust, is that hard to gain again? I mean, especially when you live through the regime that you live through in North Korea, I'd assume that it makes one rather fearful. How do you get rid of that fear? How do you gain trust again?
This is just my personal opinion, but I think it is really up to the person. It's true that when you have come through disappointing experiences and disappointing people, it does make it difficult for you to trust people and humanity. But if you keep on believing that everyone in the world is not trustworthy, that it's not possible to live, I have kept alive the thought that there are still good people in the world, and I think it's really necessary for people to believe that in order to continue living.
Lucia, the other thing that I was struck with in reading your book was that you went to China a few times. You left North Korea to escape to China, and then you would come back with food, not only for yourself but for others, for your family. I'm wondering, where does this sense of compassion that you have for others, sharing the food that you would bring back, where does that come from?
In one word, I would say it's love. It's love for your family, and the way it was taught in North Korean terminology, it is also love for your comrades. And it's just a genuine emotion that I think everybody has for their family and people that matter to them. I just wanted all of us to stay alive together. I wanted us to survive together.
And so it was love that compelled you to leave for good the last time that you did with your son. Is that right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. And was that the scariest that you've ever been in your life, having to go through the river with your son on your back?
I would have to say so, because I didn't know whether we would make it or not. I wasn't sure if that the path that I was taking would be leading us to life or death. And that's what made it so, so scary for us. Even today, sometimes I am reminded of that night when I was walking through the dark, and just before I was about to cross the river with my baby, and the heart-wrenching anxiety that I felt in my heart. I still feel fear and anxiety when I think of that night.
Susan, these are things that we can't imagine going through ourselves. So when Lucia is telling you this stuff, I get a sense as you're writing this, there's a bit of an urgency to get this story out. We really ought to think about the North Korean regime and what it's doing, don't we?
Of course. And, you know, when I first started working on this book, there was nothing in the media really going on about North Korea. And now, you know, every day there's something about the regime. But I think, and Siyan can also speak more about this, is it's not just about speaking about North Korea. It's also speaking about China. Mm-hmm. China doesn't recognize North Koreans as refugees, but as illegal work migrants, and will deport any North Korean they find back to North Korea. And the North Koreans have to go through China to either head to Mongolia or Thailand is where most try to go to, sometimes Laos, to make it to South Korea. And so China's a big obstacle, and I think the discussion on North Korea has to also include China.
Mm-hmm. So Ian, you share the sentiment in terms of what needs to happen. I'm sure you hear that from clients of yours and the sort?
Yes, definitely. It's a really difficult subject because there are so many vested interests and so many among so many different parties. But certainly from the perspective of those North Korean defectors who leave North Korea and must go through China, because there are only two other countries that North Korea shares its borders with are Russia and South Korea, which are not options at all. Mm-hmm. China definitely has a huge role playing in this.
Lucia, what needs to happen in North Korea today? Do you think life will improve at all? And are you hopeful?
모르겠어요. 제가 확실하게 거기에 대해서는
That's really difficult to answer. I'm not sure. Although I definitely hope that to be the case. That's what I think all North Koreans would hope.
Now, your son, Lucia, his name is, how do you pronounce it, Taebum?
네, 태범.
Yes, it is Taebum.
And what does his name mean?
너무 열악한 데서...
It means a large tiger or a strong tiger. And this name, I gave him this name because he was born in such difficult circumstances, and I thought that by giving him such a strong and energetic name, he would be able to overcome the obstacles that his circumstances have created in his life.
You say in the book, Lucia, that you wrote this book so that he would know your story, his story. How much of your journey does he know today? I mean, he's what, 11?
12살이에요.
He is 12 years old now.
Ah, 12.
I keep telling him, but he doesn't know all of the details, of course, and the kinds of difficulties that I've had to go through are unimaginable for him. But he does know that mommy has gone through a lot of trouble and difficulties to make sure that he never goes hungry.
Was this telling your story, was this difficult for you? And having to recount everything, one would assume that one gets angry at a lot of things, a lot of people. How do you deal with anger?
악몽을 꿨죠.
Yes, it really, really was difficult. I kept having nightmares, and it was really difficult for me to sleep. And when we were done, well, when I was done telling my story for the book, for a long time, I had such difficulty falling asleep that I started praying. I prayed to God, I can't sleep at night because I have all these terrible dreams, remembering the difficult times and difficult events that I went through. And I even asked for an eraser to erase all my difficult memories from my head.
I guess you make peace with everything bad that's happened to you, don't you?
Yes. Yes, I started to find some more peace.
Yeah, and I guess that's what surviving's about, isn't it?
Yes.
Susan, there's an afterword in the book from Stephen Haggard. Who's he, and what does he write about Lucia's story?
Well, I'll let Cian. Cian can talk about.
Sure.
Cian has worked much more closely within the sort of activist academic community, so I'll let her explain Professor Haggard's position. But I just want to say that the reason why I wanted to have someone like Professor Haggard do an afterword is because Lucia's experience of the reasons that led for her to make the exodus from North Korea was very much from the point of view of the propaganda that was taught to her both in schools and then by the regime, particularly concerning the famine but other issues involving world issues. And despite living in the West, she had 30-odd years of looking at the world from a certain perspective, and so I didn't want to have her narrative be from the present looking backward. I wanted it to be right in the present as she was living through things. And so for that, what was shaping her information about what was happening to her had to be what she knew about what was happening at that time. And so the famine, for instance, she was told by people on the street, by the Communist Party, that it was all because of the U.S. and nuclear weapons and this and that. And so that was why I felt it was important to have someone that was an expert on North Korea make a commentary about exactly what were the reasons behind the issues that forced Mrs. Jang or Lucia to run from North Korea the way she did. And Cian, I'll let you speak about who Professor Haggard is.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Professor Haggard, Stephen Haggard, is one of the authorities on the North Korean famine issue, and he's one of the two co-authors of the book, an authority book on the subject called Famine in North Korea, mm-hmm. Markets, Aid, and Reform, published by Columbia University Press in 2007. And I haven't had the pleasure of meeting him in person yet, but as Susan explained, because Mrs. Jang's account is a personal memoir, and she is recording all the events as she perceived and experienced them, Mr. Haggard is someone who provides the objective kind of historical backdrop to the circumstances which led to Mrs. Jang's escape. And we were very grateful and also flattered and also very grateful that he agreed to write, participate in this project. And he was very much impressed with the courage that Mrs. Jang showed in sharing her story. So very thankful to Mr. Haggard.
Susan, the title of the book, Stars Between the Sun and the Moon, who came up with that?
I think we all did. It was it actually was the first title that I think I worked with this, a co-author that the publisher ended up taking. Usually, I have nothing to do with the titles of books, but I think at some stage we had to just suggest a couple of titles, and that was one of them, based on of course that folk story that she told. She was told as a child and then changed to sort of make it her own. Mm-hmm. And that's where the title came from.
Yeah. It's about a very well-known kind of traditional tale, a traditional, a fairy tale type of story that's been passed down in Korea for generations about this very courageous sister-brother team who ended up outwitting a tiger who wanted to attack them and eat them while the mom was away from home. And Mrs. Jang, at some point in her telling of her story to us, she referred to this traditional story. And we all thought that the courage that she showed and the intelligence that she showed in her journey here really resembled that displayed by this brother and sister.
Lucia, this is a wonderful book. In terms of how it's turned out, are you happy with it? And who do you think should read this book?
I would hope that anybody who has an interest in North Korea and is curious about how people in North Korea live, what it is like for them, I would love for them to read. They would be able to learn a lot about our lives, especially for ordinary people.
And Lucia, you like living in Canada?
Yes, of course. It's great. It's very good.
Your story, Lucia, is very moving. All the best to you and your family. It's been an honor to talk to you today.
Thank you so much.
Suyin, thanks for your time today. And Susan, continued good luck with the book.
Great. Thank you so
much. Thank you.
The book is called Stars Between the Sun and Moon, One Woman's Life in North Korea and Escape to Freedom. Douglas and McIntyre is its publisher. Lucia Jang, Susan McClelland, and Suyin Nam join me on the line from Toronto. I want to thank the musician and photographer Jeremy Lim, who provided much-needed technical assistance with this interview. Visit jeremylim.ca. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plunton.